What's going on, everybody, man? We got another great show for you all tonight. Give me a quick second. Just want to make sure everything is running correctly. And we'll go ahead and get started, man. So, so what's going on, y'all? Happy Monday, TGIM. Welcome to the Work to Wellness to Wealth podcast. I am Gerard A. Anderson, your host and certified financial social worker, and I'm here to help you improve your financial health so you can live well, create wealth, and achieve financial independence. So don't forget to, for those of you who may be checking this out for the first time, don't forget to follow me. The podcast is now on Apple Podcasts. I'm on Spotify, iHeartRadio, I'm on YouTube, or your favorite podcast player. So, man, we are spreading this message through every outlet that we possibly can. So, please, man, support, download, subscribe, comment, do all those great things. Let me know what your thoughts are, how you feeling about the content, and if you got any questions or anything that you would like to see me cover, please let me know. So I got an exciting episode, and I got a superstar guest, good friend, joining me tonight. And we're going to just address some questions. Here are a couple of things that I want you to think about to just kind of set the stage for what we're going to talk about tonight. So number one, have you ever thought about why you are where you are financially? So what are all of those behind the scene contributing factors that kind of influence where you are currently financially? That's number one. Number two is I want you to think about if you are not happy with your current financial circumstances, what are you going to do about it? So would you just stay there? Or if you wanted to change it, do you even know where to start? So that's what we're going to talk about on today's episode. We're going to tackle these questions as we hit the topic, uncovering your hidden money story. So make sure you go and share, like, tell somebody that we're on, and we're about to jump into this. So I'm so excited to have a good friend and guest coworker that I've known for a long time to join me tonight to dive into this subject. Miss Pamela Jemison is going to be my special guest. But before I bring her out, y'all know what time it is. Let me do our financial disclaimer so nobody gets it twisted. So I nor my guests are financial advisors, and the content of this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only, and it does not constitute financial advice. Your financial situation is unique, so please do your research and consult with a qualified financial advisor who is familiar with your unique circumstances. I nor my guests, we are not responsible for any monetary losses or gains resulting from the use of this information provided in this podcast. So again, it's for educational purposes only. All right, let me bring out my special guest. Please welcome to the stage, Miss Pamela Jemison is in the building.
Hello, hello, hello.
Pam, man, first let me say thank you for agreeing to be on the podcast. We go way back, man. How long have we known each other? Back in the, I joined
15 years plus, something like that.
It's been
a long time.
Yeah, man. So, man, and Pam has helped me through a lot of challenging times, man. So again, Pam, thank you for agreeing to being on here tonight. And I'm excited to just tap into your expertise as we kind of dig into some financial matters and just kind of help people figure out how to move the needle forward in their finances. So we can get to living the life that we want to live. You know, that's what this whole thing is all about.
Yes.
So definitely, Pam, being that we know each other from swag, got to say shout out to all of our swag folks.
Hey, peeps. Yes.
What's going on, swag? So Pam, just to give the people a little bit of background about you, just share a little bit of your story. Like, how did you even get hooked into financial, the personal finance space, and just really being conscious of your money and personal finance.
Yes, thank you. So I want to first start out by saying thank you for this invite to discuss this most important topic. Finances is huge. And one of the things that I think that I realized early on is that we have to talk about it. And as a society, we have not always opened up the doors to allow people to discover where they're at and where to go and how to do things differently. So as a social worker, when I became aware of this financial social work program, which was like a wellness program for social work professionals to be able to help people look at the behaviors and the actions and the thoughts behind their money to help them improve their money, of course, became very intriguing to me. And so as you did, I also went through that certification process to learn more, to gain that certification, to be able to give that information, especially to our community of social workers. You know, we're always kind of labeled as the people that don't make a lot of money, which, you know, depending on what you're doing, may or may not be true. But as we have learned in that certification program, it's much deeper than the amount you make.
Yeah. Pam, you then went into half of my notes for tonight, but you hit on a lot of good stuff, and we're going to touch on a lot of that tonight. One thing that you talked about, and this is where I want to begin, you talked about the financial social work certification that you got. So let's start there. So okay. We are certified. I know a lot of people, they was just like, well, how you just started talking about money? But we did put in some work to get educated in this area. So Pam and I are certified financial social workers. And so you know, it's funny, Pam, because I didn't even know that you had gotten a certification. And so we was at a conference a couple of years ago, and the lady who created the certification program was there, and she spoke. And this is like instantly when I saw the subject, I was like, oh, man, combining finances and health and wellness and social work. So for me, it was like a no brainer because I had just kind of gotten into a period of my life where I realized how important finances were, really that finances were at the intersection of every part of our life. Yes. And for the early part of my life, I really didn't give it a lot of attention. So when I heard about the certification program, I was just like, ooh, I got to do that. So just to kind of give you some background. So I went through the certification, got certified, and then was just talking to Pam yesterday, and I mean, not yesterday, but one day, and you was just like, oh yeah, I already got that. So I was like, yo, yes. I didn't tell you, boy, that you found this gold mine. And so once I found out that she had it, we just began to talk, and like organically, we was like, man, we really have to spread this word of financial wellness. Cause you know, we touch on that a lot as social workers, you know, just wanting people to be able to live a higher quality of life and removing barriers. But truth be told, Pam, a lot of the barriers that we address as social workers are financial in nature. Would you agree with that?
I totally agree. When we talk about thoughts and behaviors and actions, definitely. But I was going to back up and say, remember, even before financial social work certification, we talked a lot about money.
We did.
Stocks and bonds and what we doing and what's next. And so I think that we're both very intrigued with learning more about money and how to create that financial wellness piece.
Yeah. And you brought up a good point. It's so important for you to have somebody that you can talk money with. So a lot of people are so taboo about, right, you know, finances and wealth. So I mean, it's really, really, really good to just have somebody to bounce some things off of where finances are concerned, because it impacts every part of our life. So, Pam, so let's do this. So since we started out with the financial social work piece, a lot of people, I'm sure, are probably unfamiliar with this term. I know I had never heard of it before. I heard the lady who created it, Ms. Rita Wolfson. So How about we just kind of go through a little bit and give people a little bit of background of exactly what does financial social work entail? And then we can maybe kind of get into how it could help benefit them wherever they are financially.
Okay.
All right. So I just jotted down a couple of points. These are what I would say are the main tenets of the financial social work framework. And Pam, feel free to kind of give your two cents on any one of these points. As a matter of fact, I'll kind of stop and let you add whatever you want to. But the first thing is that financial social work, it emphasizes financial health and wellness. And I love that because a lot of times we just about getting the bag and, you know, a lot of people work themselves in the ground trying to get the bag. But what good is the bag if you're not healthy, if you're not well? So it emphasizes financial health and wellness, which looks at money as a source of empowerment to be used. Now get this, looking at money as a source of empowerment to be used to help maximize your physical, mental, emotional, and social well-being. Now, Pam, have you ever heard anyone define the purpose of finances as a means to maximize your physical, mental, emotional, and social well-being?
No, that's social work stuff. That's sociology kind of stuff. We don't talk about that when we talk about finances. As a matter of fact, again, as I stated, finances is not really a topic that we like to talk about. It's kind of taboo. So when you look at that health and wellness piece, it seems like that would be like the initial stages to be able to do things properly. One thought that when you said that, I was thinking about lottery winners and how they get all of this money and, you know, they're broke very soon because, again, those thoughts, behaviors, that health and wellness piece has not happened for them. So they're just kind of, you know, going through life, not knowing what to do, how to do. So I think that this is the important piece that we educate and continue to educate people about how to get to that healthy place.
Man, that's good. That's good. And, you know, even when I was trying to think of the name of this podcast, you know, I know we talked about money and wealth, but I didn't want people to think that it was just about money and wealth. And then I also wanted to highlight the point that, you know, you don't have to necessarily leave your job to have conversations and to be working to put yourself in a position to be wealthy. So I was just like, okay, so let's talk about the work part too, because I know there was a time where I thought like I couldn't get to a place of wealth while I was working. So I might tell you that story later. And then in the middle of that, it was like, okay, but you can't forget the wellness piece, because a lot of people, you know, we've been sold on the importance of work and, you know, a lot of people want to be financially independent, but in the midst of all that, we've lost the message, or we never truly discovered the importance of being well while you're working. And so I wanted to emphasize those three areas, not just working, because we have to do that, but work as a means to help you be well and use the money and the finances to help build wellness, but also help get you to a place of creating wealth. Okay, let's go on, because I know we can go on and on and on and on. So the second tenet is financial circumstances are determined by your relationship with yourself and your money, not simply how much you make or owe. What do you think about that, Mopam?
So that one's deep. So basically, you know, we tend to think that if we make more money, then we'll be happier. And the reality is that you have to deal with the relationship that you currently have with money in order to get to a space where things are considered to be healthy in order to deal with the aspects of your life. So I think that, again, we're going back to that education piece. I don't think these are things that have truly ever been talked about. We're kind of just thrown into adulthood and kind of let's figure it out as we go along. So I think that this certification process definitely taught me to look at things from that behavioral model to determine what my next steps were going to be. And also when you talked about the wealth piece, it's going to be different for everybody. Not everybody's wealth is going to be on the same level. My needs are not necessarily your needs. And so, you know, we have to figure out personally where we want to be.
That's good. Mm-hmm. That's good. So key point to take out of all of this, no matter where you go or what you do in life, it's two things that you're never going to be able to escape from. Number one is yourself, and number two is the need for finances. So I love it that it starts with you. Like, we can talk all about strategies, but it's ultimately going to start with you and your relationship with yourself, and then your relationship with money. All right, let's go on. Where did I leave off at? So financial circumstances determined by your relationship with yourself and your money, not how much you make. Oh, next one is, those relationships, that being your relationship with yourself and your money, they drive your financial behavior. And your financial behavior, it includes how you earn money, how you spend money, how you save money, how you share and borrow money. And these financial behaviors determine or are the foundation on which your financial circumstances are built. So that's very important. Pamela.
So Gerard, read all of that all over again and put the word taught in front of every statement that you made, how you were taught to.
Okay. Look at you. All right. So those relationships drive taught financial behaviors, including how you were taught to earn money, how you were taught to spend money, how you were taught to save money, how you were taught to share and borrow money. And on these things are what your financial circumstances are built.
So basically, that is saying that the way that we were raised has a great impact on the way that we think about finances and the way that we think about money. And again, I believe that almost every family would think that they were taught the right thing. Mm. And so we kind of repeat, even if things weren't quite right, we repeat what we were taught, what we were shown. And so when we look at this financial social work piece, we're looking at changes that may need to be made in order to change our thinking about money. And the first one would be that money doesn't necessarily have to be taboo.
Hmm. Now you just dropped some bars there. I don't know if you even know that you just dropped some bars there. But while you was talking, so what came to mind for me is that a lot of times we didn't even know that we were being taught. Like, right. Of course, in school, you are aware that I'm in a classroom and I'm being taught by a teacher. But when it comes to finances and just life, you were being taught things based on what you heard, based on your experiences, yeah, based on the example that was being set before you. So without you even knowing it, you kind of embraced these lessons that you were being taught, but you didn't even know that you were being taught. And now think about this. Our financial circumstances are a result of things that we were taught growing up that we didn't even realize that mm-hmm. we were taught.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's good, man.
And so how many of us have thought about those lessons, whether they were good or bad, and whether or not we need to make changes?
And that's what we're going to get at. The changes, like, if you were taught something, and not necessarily that it even had to be wrong, Pam, but it just may be that it served you well in one season of your life, and for the season that you're in now, it doesn't serve you well anymore. So you may need to let that go and replace it with something else.
I think we do the best with the information that we have at the point that we have it. So, correct.
Okay. All right. Let's go on. So the last tenet of financial social work of the framework, it focuses on behavioral change as a means of changing your financial circumstances. Let me say that again. It focuses on Let me emphasize financial behavioral change as a means of changing your financial circumstances. So that kind of speaks to what you were just talking about, Pam, the importance of changing the behavioral piece of how you interact with your money as a means to changing your financial circumstances.
Yeah, so exploring those thoughts, feelings, and attitudes towards money.
Man, that's good. We can stop right there. And I think
we're done. Okay, cool.
Hey, that's just the tip of the iceberg. All right. So next I wanted to go into a quick three-step process. And it's basically what we just covered, but the three steps of this whole framework that we want to bring it all together. So step one, just so you all are clear that, and you can use it in your own personal life. Step one, you have to change your relationship with yourself and money. So specifically seek to understand the where, the why, the when, and the how of your relationship with money. Step number two is change your thinking where money and finances are concerned. So that's your thoughts, your feelings, your attitudes, and your beliefs about yourself and money. And then the third step of the process is change your behavior. And as we said, and Pam, I love that you emphasized taught how you were taught to earn money, how you were taught to spend and save money, how you were taught to borrow, save and borrow money. So the only thing I want to touch here is how we were taught to earn money. So for the overwhelming majority of most of us, the only way that we were taught to earn money was going through the process of getting an education so you can get a job, so you can earn money. So go to school, get your degree, get a job so you can earn money. And so I think one of the biggest things that we were taught was that a job is the only way that you can earn money. And that's simply just not true. But if you weren't taught anything else, and I think, Pam, this is where a lot of people struggle at, you can only default on what you know. Mm-hmm. And so if I need more money and I was only taught to earn money through a job, guess what's the first thing I'm going to do if I need more money? Mm-hmm. Go and try to find me another job. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what keeps us limited a whole lot of time. So it's going to be a lot of things that you're going to have to reconsider that you maybe have been taught your whole life. A lot of things that you're going to have to unlearn and relearn. Okay, so Pam, let's jump into behavioral change. So if you change your financial habits and behavior, you can transform your financial circumstances. Now, Pam, do you think that's an oversimplification? If you change your financial habits and behavior, you can transform your financial circumstances. Because a lot of people may think, well, you don't know my circumstances, and it's not that easy just to say I'm gonna change your behavior and expect things to change. So do you think that it's that simple?
I think it is, but I don't think it's something the statement is simple. It's not something simple to do because you have to identify and address those unconscious barriers.
Ooh.
So you've got to be willing to put in a little work to say, again, what have I been taught? What changes do I need to make? What behaviors have I exhibited? And how can I progress into actual wellness? So the thought process is going to be a big part of your willingness to make those changes.
And this may be another whole episode that you touched on the unconscious or subconscious part. So there are aspects of our belief system about money on the inside of us that are even beyond our conscious awareness, because they were planted in there when we were young children, you know, even infants sometimes. And unbeknownst to us, those subconscious thoughts are pretty much running the show of a lot of the behaviors and the habits that we've developed about money. So if I'm hearing you right, Pam, until we really go down on that deeper level and address those thoughts and those subconscious programmings, you can want to change as much as you want. But if I'm hearing you right, until we tap into the subconscious, the thoughts, the attitudes, and the feelings, it's really going to be hard for you to change your financial circumstances.
That's correct. I'm not necessarily impossible, but it's going to make it a lot more difficult to change those circumstances.
So y'all see the work that we have to do. So that's why you can't just talk about the money and leave out all of these other parts that we're talking about. All right. So let's get practical, Pam. So Okay. Someone may be saying, it's like, okay, this all sounds good, but like, I wouldn't even know where to begin to where to start at. So you're talking about stuff from childhood, being taught things before I was even born. Like, where practically would a person start at if they wanted to change? So that's what we want to talk about next. And so really, though, we said all of the things that we just covered as a foundation to what we're going to segue into now. And that is starting with your money story. So if you want to know what first base is to changing your thoughts, your feelings and behavior, start with your money story. And so let me just read this quick thing, and then we will get into some more practical examples of what your money story is. So consider this: financial behavior. And Pam, you already said this. You pretty much already highlighted everything that I'm about to read, but financial behavior is learned from the adults in our lives during childhood.
Yes.
Regardless of whether those lessons were taught, role modeled, or observed, they form the foundation for your relationship with money. And that foundation formed the basis for your financial circumstances today. Mm-hmm. So just pretty much reiterating what you were taught years ago is influencing where you are today. So Pam, I know when we did our presentation at the conference, we shared a little bit of our personal money stories just to kind of give you all an example of how this might really work, how all of this works. So I'm going to let you go first.
Oh, wow. Caught me off guard with that one. Okay. So let's see. What do I want to say about my money story? So I grew up in a two-parent household, not only a two-parent household, but pretty much a two-parent neighborhood. So, and I'll say this, I'm an only child. So things came to me very easily. To me, finances were never a concern. I'm sure my parents had a different story, but in my eyesight, there was
no. You got me with the two-parent neighborhood. I mean, mm-hmm. I got the household, but you said a two-parent neighborhood. I don't think I ever even heard such a concept before.
Yes.
Well, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
That's okay. And then the reality of that not everybody kind of grew up like that didn't happen to me until I went to college. Mm. And I started to see people who, didn't have that same support, financial support. One particular friend that I remember extensively, she was raised by her dad, a single dad, and we went to her mailbox every single day looking for money for him for a whole year, and it never came. And it was kind of baffling to me to think about, how could your parent do you like that?
But nothing ever showed up.
And she was very hopeful that money was coming every single day.
That's trauma right there.
Yeah, very, very, very interesting. So again, that's where I started to learn that people's circumstances were not necessarily the same as what I grew up learning and seeing and actually being taught. But at the same time, I think I also realized that we weren't doing anything generationally. So things were fine. They were dandy. You know, we had the house, we had the cars. You know, I was one of those lucky teenagers. I had a car at a teenager.
How old were you when you got that car, Pam? How old were you?
16.
God, dog. You had a good. I didn't get my first car until I was like a junior in college. And then that car was already 20 years old when I got it. But I digress. Go ahead.
No, just very fortunate. And then again, you realize that everybody is not the same as you. And you start, I started to kind of look at circumstances a little differently and kind of view money a little bit differently from that point on. And I'll pass it on and let you give a little bit about your story now.
Yeah. So one of my earliest money stories, I remember my father, he used to work in construction and he spent a lot of time outside. And I remember he used to come home and he used to wear short sleeve shirts and the lower part of his arm was like black just from being in the sun all day. And his face was like burnt really dark. You know, we don't really burn, but and compared to the rest of his body where he had clothes, it was like a noticeable discoloration. And so just that image alone kind of triggered a thought in me. It's like, man, I want to make sure that I don't have to get an outside job. And so that was like the first thing. I want to make enough money where I don't have to be outside working in the sun all day. And then I remember that he used to wake up 4 o'clock every morning to go to work. And just even that, it's just like every day for the majority of a year, imagine having to wake up 4 o'clock in the morning to go to work before the sun is even up. And so that was another thing that I was like, I don't want to have to work my whole life waking up like at an alarm clock my whole life at 4 o'clock. I just said 4 o'clock in the morning. So I think those were some initial seeds. And then as I progressed on, another significant money story for me was, my mom was an educator, so I went to college and got the master's degree and did all of that. And then I got my first job in as a school social worker. And I was excited about that because it's like I was following this blueprint, man. And somehow, Pam, you know, we just thought we was going to end up rich.
Correct.
Like, you go to school and get your degree, you're going to get buku money. And one day you're just going to wake up a millionaire. So that was the thought that I had. And so what ended up happening, I got a job where I did an internship at, and I was just so happy to get a job because they offered me a job after I did the internship. I didn't even ask them how much I was going to be making. And so.
Been there, done that.
Just so happy. Oh, I can check this off the list. I got a job. So with a master's degree, I did my research. I was expecting to make at least about $45,000, $40,000 to $45,000. Pam, man, when I got my first paycheck, when I finally got around to checking my salary, I was getting $23,000 a year. Ooh. With a master's degree because of how they paid social workers in that particular state. So I was just like, wait a minute. Y'all realize I did finish the degree, right? I'm not still working on it. And they was just like, nope, Gerard, that's what they pay social workers in this state. So that was a big blow to me. So I think right there, that triggered something in me that I'm going to have to do something different if I want to even have a remote opportunity of living the life I want to live. And then to add insult to injury, Pam, after 2 years, I got laid off of that job due to budget cuts. Mm-hmm. So those was two strikes right there. So that was three for me. I was done because the promise of if I follow this path, everything is going to work out fine. That went out the window. Number two, if I get a large or high degree, I'm going to get paid a lot of money. That was thrown out the window. And then the whole thought of, hey, man, you're going to have job security. Mm-hmm. That was thrown out the window. Mm-hmm. So I think that really triggered in me a desire to find a better way of having an opportunity to live the type of life that I wanted to live. So real quick, I just wanted to ask you this question. When did thoughts of other ways of earning money and income enter into your life? So you had your job and you was making that income, but where did the thoughts of doing other things for income kind of enter in? Whether that was investments, I don't know, but.
So for me, my story is a little bit different, but kind of similar to what you just said in the sense that when I was in high school, I was working at the grocery store called Jewel. And at that time, I had made it up to, I started in my junior year. So I did junior and senior year, and I had made it up to an assistant manager.
Okay.
And then again, but programming told me that I had to go to college.
Ah.
So I quit that job and went to college and came back from college making less money than I made as the assistant manager, which blew me.
Okay, you didn't tell me that part. Okay, so assistant manager making this much, went to college, got your degree, got your education.
That's the bachelor's, yes.
Ended up making less than that.
Yes.
Oh, Pam, now that's big, because they promised us that that promise was just like, if you go through and get this degree, you're going to make good money.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily too. Oh, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's fine. But what's good money?
Mm.
Again, different for me and different for you. You know what I mean? So that's always. Yeah. So that made me say, I got to do something different. So that's when I became interested in learning more about money. And remember, I talked about as far as my parents, I never knew of any financial concerns or issues because it wasn't something that was talked about with a child. So there could have been, but I didn't know of any. So there wasn't a lot of education for me on money. Again, as the only child, I was just getting what I wanted each and every time. So life was good.
So even in that, though, but there weren't any discussions, intentional conversations about money.
Mm-mm.
Man, that's...
I think that was considered grown folks stuff.
How about that, man? Something that's so important was considered something that grown folks talked about only.
Mm-hmm.
So y'all see how we have all of these things floating around in our mind and our belief system that could be holding us back financially. Pam, I don't know if you remember when we did our session together, we had one of our participants who said that their family just never talked about money.
Correct.
It was just never a thought. And so it's just like they just kind of had to figure things out on their own. But she really didn't realize that they never talked about money until that moment where we was at the conference, and it triggered for her. We never had money conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
Which I don't think that's something that we think about. Again, we go into adulthood and just kind of try to figure it out, not knowing the root cause of why we're behaving or acting the way that we are and the actions that we're taking regarding money.
Man, that's good. And something else that you said that really hit me. It's just like, you have to figure out what you want. Like, what works for you? What's a lot of money for you? I'll tell you this and we'll move on. So I was teaching a workshop seminar to some guys that I mentor. It's a mentoring program that I'm a part of. And so I was talking about, you know, finances and budgeting and, you know, how much money do you want to make in your life? And so one of the guys, he was a high schooler. He's like, he wants a lot of money. So I was like, okay, well, that's cool. I asked him, I said, how much is a lot of money?
Mm-hmm.
He said, oh, maybe about $10,000 a year.
Ooh.
His brother looked at him. He's like, man, what you talking about? That ain't no money. And it was such an eye opener. It was funny, but it wasn't funny at the same time, because to him, $10,000 was like a lot of money in his mind. And so after we kind of broke down bills and expenses, he quickly realized it's like, oh, that's not any money at all. So we just want to say to you, you have to, first base is just get clear on what you want. What's required for you to live the type of lifestyle that you want to live for your family or whatever the case may be. And then after that, we can then start figuring out what's the path to get there. What are some of the limitations in your thinking that we have to address? And that's what this whole financial social work curriculum is about. It's really helping you to get clear, number one, on what you want for yourself and your family financially. But then we have to figure out, like, what are the programmings and the roadblocks and the limiting beliefs that could keep you from getting there. All right, Pam. So we're getting ready to wrap up. But So what we want you to do, if you're watching this, whether it's live or on the replay, we want you to go and start thinking, what are some of the money stories that you encountered growing up that shaped your beliefs about money? So I'm going to read five questions, and I want you, we want you all to go and really think about these questions and answer them. So number one is like, who or what influenced your thoughts, behaviors, and beliefs the most concerning money as you were growing up? So think about who those people were. Like we talked about the person in our workshop, they didn't talk about money in her household. So maybe it wasn't her parents as a result of conversation, but then it could have been her parents just watching how they handled money, or, you know, the experiences they had where money was concerned. Question number two is, what were the main messages you received about money? So, you know, some of the common ones, you know, money doesn't grow on trees, and, you know, you got to work three times as hard just to get the same as other folks get. And so just want you to be conscious of what were those messages that you heard growing up that maybe you carry with you even to this day. Number three is, which of your childhood money messages do you still carry with you today? Number four, which one experience had a significant impact on your thoughts and your behaviors around money? And then number five, what money beliefs did you hold as a child that you need to let go of as an adult? Pam, talk about that real quick, and then we'll get ready to wrap up. But why might it be necessary to let go of some money beliefs that you had growing up as a child or a teen, but it may be necessary to let it go as an adult?
Well, when you first said that, you know, I was thinking about the thing about the money subject being taboo. So we need to talk about it. We need to be comfortable in talking to someone. Now, that's not something you go up to a stranger or, you know, your coworkers and talk to you about your money situations. But is there some person that you can feel comfortable with to have a deep dive conversation about those thoughts and beliefs? Because, again, bouncing stuff off of other people is always going to be more productive than trying to do it by yourself. And then when you think about those past money stories, you want to look at them to see if that's working for you. And if not, what behaviors, what changes, what attitudes can you create to write a different money chapter?
Ooh, for your life. Yeah. That's the word for tonight. It's time for you to write a new money chapter for your life. That right there is good, Pam. That might be a book right there. It's time for you to write a new money chapter for your life. And this is something that just hit me when you was talking. How many of us are holding on to things that are no longer working in our lives?
Yes.
It's not even above not working, it's holding you back. Mm-hmm. And we hold on to it because that's the only thing that we know, or that's how my mama, my grandma, big mama, them did it. And it's so crazy. Everything in society is changing. Technology is changing. Everything is constantly shifting. So how much more do you need to shift your thoughts and your beliefs to keep up with the pace of changes in the world that we're living in today versus holding on to something that you learned back in that was sweet in the 80s, but baby girl, we in the 2020s now. So you're going to have to develop some new ways of thinking and some new ways of doing some things. Man, Pam, that was good.
That financial was good. Healing. That's what we're about.
That's what we're about. Financial health and healing. So Pam, let's transition a little bit. So you got some things that you've been working on. So we have a lot of tools that we try to use to help bridge the gap for people's financial literacy and just your goals of where you are to where you want to be. So you have this product, and I love it. When you showed it to me, I was like, ooh, this is going to help a lot of people. It's called PJ's Financial and important document checklist. So tell us a little bit about this document and how we can help people on their financial journey.
So in another instance in my life, I had the opportunity to be the executor of an estate, and I learned a lot through that. And what I learned, I tried to put down on paper and started realizing that there are a lot of little things that we need to do that we are not necessarily doing or putting in the right place or having it all together. So what I did was just created a checklist that looks at things and documents that you have to have your affairs in orders. You know, we always talk about wills and those type of things, but there's all kind of other information that's going to be important to have in one place and for people to be able to easily locate. So I created this this document that has like personal information, your financial documents, your insurance documents, legal documents, your medical records, employment records, educational, digital assets. And you know, that's way out of my realm right now, but I included it there. Emergency documents. So I just created a checklist for you to kind of go down and say, let me get this together, put it all in one spot, so that it's easily accessible and that I have all of my documents together, and get you to start thinking about some things that you still need to get together. And so, as you stated, this financial checklist is available on Etsy right now for a mere $5.
That's it. Man, we might have to talk about that, man.
It's about education. That's what we're trying to get that information out.
$5, Pam?
$5. That's it. That's all.
Okay, okay.
You can't even buy Starbucks for $5 anymore. So
listen, y'all need to put your hands on this document. And so the address to get it, the web address is on the ticker below. But I'm gonna tell you why this is so important. And Pam, you mentioned estate planning, and I'll just give the most recent example. Not most recent, but there's a lot of people who leave this earth and they don't have these documents in place. And, you know, one of the most recent examples I heard about, and they could still be going through it, was Chadwick Boseman. And man, loved Chadwick Boseman, Black Panther, and everything that he did, a lot of other movies. But I guess it turns out that he didn't create a will before he passed. And now his family, they're going through that fight of, I mean, you think about his whole life's work, they're having to fight to get what he worked his whole life for, that of course he wanted it to go to his family, but because he didn't have the proper documentation or will or trust or estate plan, his family is having to jump through all these hoops to get what rightfully belongs to them.
And pay for it.
Oh, and they're having to pay for it. Mm-hmm. That's huge right there. You having to pay for what's rightfully yours. Mm-hmm. And so imagine having a document like the one Pam has created, where all you have to do is already laid out. You just have to do the work and be able to check the box off. And like she said, you want to get all of these documents and put it in a central place. So when we leave here, like if you have to leave unexpectedly, if something happens and, you know, heaven forbid you get into a wreck or something, you can already have all of this stuff and you can have these conversations with your family and they can know these are all of the documents that I have and they're in this safe. If anything ever happens to me. And Pam, don't you have something on there with combinations and passwords too?
There was digital passwords was on here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Password list or digital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So even something as small as your password, you may not think about that. But if you have a lot of assets and different things online, they're going to need to know the passwords, how to access those different things. So this is a priceless tool. And Pam, I'm still shocked that you're only charging $5, but
today.
I'm
going
Hey, today's price isn't guaranteed to be tomorrow's price. So if you're watching this, go to this web address on the ticker and go ahead and pick this up. And don't just get the document and not do the work. Like, if it has will on there, and I'm so happy. I just completed a will a couple of months ago. And it was just such a peace of mind to know that at least I have a plan to kind of exceed my life here. And, you know, whoever's here, they have something to go by. So, so I'm gonna quit there, but you all get your hands on that document. The address is down there. And so, Pam, we both provide financial social work services. If people want to connect with you, what do they need to do?
They can email me at JimmersonAndAssociates@gmail.com.
Okay. So
Jimmerson, you, last name, and associates at gmail.com.
JimmersonAndAssociates@gmail.com. So, so we both have different coaching services we provide. For me personally, go to my website and, I put that down there as www.gerardaanderson.com. Y'all go check that out. I have a bunch of free resources for people watching this podcast. I got a special sale going on now. I have a book. Matter of fact, I think it's on the wall here.
Yeah, grab that book. We need that book.
5-star mentality. So we talked a lot tonight about getting to the mindset and the belief system. And I wrote this book with the things that we talked about tonight. I wrote this book to address those issues. So 5-star mentality is simply like your wealthy place, whatever that means for you. For some people, that's being able to pay for the water at the movie theater. That's like, hey, or valet parking is a big deal for some people, or being able to go on a 5-star vacation. So whatever your 5-star lifestyle is, you have to determine it, but can't live a 5-star life if you have a 1-star mentality. So this book really helps you to address the mentality part where creating a financially independent life is concerned. So go to my website, GerardAAnderson.com, and you can get that book for 20% off. And like I said, I got a bunch of other things on there and coaching services, whole bunch of stuff. Just go to the website and check it out. And Pam, one more thing. Black Friday is coming up. Hey, so we got to have something to offer the people for Black Friday. I am going to start, it's going to be called Club Financial Wellness. And a lot of the things that we talked about tonight, I'm going to walk you through step by step on things that you can do to improve your financial health, but also position yourself to create wealth and become financially independent. So we'll talk more about that in the future. And hey, we got to get ready for 2025. Y'all got a few more weeks left for 2025 hit. So take this time, do what you need to do, get your mind right, get everything in order. But listen, don't let anything deter you from believing that 2025 can be your best year, because it starts here and it starts with the things that you do. Right. Pam, I think that's it. Next week, I'm going to do an episode on protecting your financial, mental, and emotional wellness throughout the holiday season. Be sure to check in with that. PJ, thank you so much. You have shared a wealth of information. What's your final thought to those who are watching now and to those who might catch the replay? Just give a one more nugget and we'll sign off for the night.
I don't have anything new, but I will say start the conversation. We have to become comfortable in talking about our money and where we're trying to go. And again, it's not about how much you make. It's about the thought processes behind what you're doing with your money and the behaviors that you're exhibiting. So find that person, talk about it, get into some of those coaching programs if you need to. Just do whatever it needs to educate yourself, because that's going to be important, especially in 2025.
especially in 2025. Mm-hmm. All right, y'all. That's it. Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you for watching. Pam, thank you so much for joining me tonight. And this is just our first episode now. So, you know, we got a lot more that we can uncover that we'll do in the probably in 2025. So you all stay tuned. But appreciate you all. Make sure you go check out my website, and you all have a good day. And we'll see you on the next episode.
Bye-bye.
See ya.